We have a man who has been recognized as the best regional and state stand operator in the state of Tennessee in that larger region, a man who has a lot of humor, as you'll notice in his answers and in his questions. Well, he won't be asking too many questions tonight. He'll be giving the answers, mostly. And it's his name is Jerry Kidd. I'm sure you all know him. I call him the Don Rickles of For the People because he comes in with a lot of humor. But you're going to see something tonight, another side of Jerry. He can be serious, and he uses a lot of humor in his life. And Jerry comes to us from the wonderful state of Tennessee, and particularly a little town just off I-75 called Jellicoe, Tennessee. Jerry, are you there to talk to me tonight?
Yeah, I finally made it back. My server kicked me off of all night for it to do that. It did it tonight, but I'm back now, hopefully.
All right, Jerry. Now, we all know you're a hill man from eastern Tennessee, and you've told me some interesting stories about where you were born, where your house was. Would you like to share some of that with us to start off, and then we'll get into the Tennessee School for the Blind and some other things that you've done. But start out with that location where you were born and brought up.
Well, I was born in a holler that's a valley between mountains that we called Hoodell Holler. That was way back in 49. Not going to give the 12th. March the 20th of 49. And I lived there until, I believe it was right at 1965. When I was 6 years old, there were coal mines in the mountains around me, and we burned coal from some of the mines. And I found this little shiny object out back one day behind the house. And so, they say curiosity killed a cat, but that day, that thing almost killed me. But first I bit on it, and then I take a hammer to it. It didn't do anything. The night before, my dad had been out shooting a pistol, and I thought it was one of the spent shells from the pistol, so I was wondering if it would do anything after it was, fired. But when I put the match to it, I lost three of my fingers and my thumb on the right hand, and that's the cause of my blindness today. And like I said, we lived there in Hoodell Holler to 65. I-75 was built then or started, the dirt and rocks they took off the top of the mountain, they just dumped over the side of the mountain, and after a while, it created a huge pile of dirt down there that there are caves in that mountain, and the outlets for the water had been plugged up, and rain or what have you caused that whole side of the mountain to move about one quarter of a mile, and we could go to bed at night listening to the rocks come rolling down the side of the mountain, wonder if they're going to hit the house or not. But approximately 3 months after we moved to where my parents live now, the landslide did crush the house and rolled it against trees, and that's where I lived, and we had a good time up there. We didn't have a whole lot, went barefoot a lot, but we had a good time most of all.
I want you to tell me one more story, Jerry, about you having that pet skunk. I think the people would like to hear about that pet skunk.
Well, when I was about, 17, 18 years old, my grandma Stevens lived over a little town here about 30 miles away. Larry and Fire knows where it's at. Larry's parents are not far from there. Pine Top, Kentucky, and my little brother, he's probably 14 at the time. We rolled over, spend the summer a few days with my grandma, and you know, we didn't get along too good sometimes, so we was fighting that day. And we went out to visit a neighbor about half a mile away, and on the way, we were throwing rocks at each other, babe, intending to kill. And I was in front of him, and he hollered, "Jerry, Jerry, don't throw no more rocks. There's some skunks down here." And I said, "Aw, you a liar." He says, "No, I'm not lying. There's a mama and four little ones." I said, "You're lying, Donald." He says, "No, I'm not lying." I said, "I tell you what to do. You take off running, and just before you get to the little skunks, you get in the ditch where they are, and as you pass them, you just grab up one for me and one for you." Well, buddy, when he came up to me, he had two little skunks in his hands. And we carried them around. We took them up to the neighbor, and, you know, and the little fellas, they were putting out a little odor, not a whole lot, not enough to bother you. But, you know, we took them home, and the dogs got a hold of one of them and killed it right away. But Jimmy, the one I claimed, I don't know if it's the one I actually started out with or not, but, you know, skunks are skunks, and one looks a whole lot like the other one. But we would haul him around, you know, we'd go to town somewhere. We'd take him with us, buddy. He could ride anywhere he wanted to in the car. But he didn't spray us, you know, often or very much. We'd take him up to the barn and tear wash nest down and give him to the nest, and he'd eat the larvae out of them, and he just loved those. But one night, my sister's getting ready to go to summer camp. I don't know what she done to him. And she went out the kitchen door, and she came back. Until this day, we can hold our nose and say, "Shoo!" She gets mad at us. And Mama had us to take him off, and a couple of days later, he's back. And then one night, he was out in the yard. Mother said she heard a couple car doors slammed, and then she smelt skunk, and we saw him no more.
Oh, boy. Can you imagine having a pet skunk that wasn't de-skunked? But I guess you do what you have to do up in those eastern hills of Tennessee. Now, Jerry, because of that accident, you lost your sight, you lost part of the fingers of one hand, and at some point you went off to the Tennessee School for the Blind. How did that work out for you? How did you manage there?
Well, Lou, I was six when I exploded that blasting cap. I hung around the house, had a homebound teacher until I was 13 years old. Or 14, somewhere along in there. And I went to school for blind in November 63. And you're talking about homesick, buddy. Yeah, it was Christmas time before I could go back home, and I guess I cried every day and every night for years. But I was put in a third grade classroom with some third graders, but I wasn't classified as third grade. The teacher mainly taught me Braille and got me caught up to about the following year. I went into the sixth grade and stayed there. I graduated when I was 23. I don't remember what position in the class I had, but it's pretty close to the top. We had 22 or 3 people in class that time, but I enjoyed it. Actually, once I got there and got used to the place, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I believe it was, well, I know it was the best years of my life. I long for them to go back. I want to be 15 again.
Yeah, and you made many good friends there, from what I can tell, because you meet many of them here every night or every other night on For the People, and you talk to your old classmates from the Tennessee School for the Blind. How difficult was it, Jerry, learning to read Braille with, you really only learned to read it with one hand, right?
Well, I can read it, but, you know, it's really slow, and most of the time when I get to the bottom of the page, I've forgotten what the top of the page you know, was talking about, but I can read Braille. I don't use it much anymore with the use of the computer and speech. You know, if I want to write down a phone number, a web address, or something of that nature, I do have a Braille writer here for that I can use. And but that's about the only usage of Braille that I have, is just to jot down brief, short notes. And but back then, I was sort of proud of myself. I wrote my first letter home in Braille in 28 days after I began to learn Braille. So I've done pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, I think you did pretty good is right. You showed the right amount of determination to go on. Now, after you left this Tennessee School for the Blind, did you have trouble finding a job? What did you do for a few years there before you got your stand?
Well, I enrolled at Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro. Instead of learning at school, I was goofing off, and I really didn't have a background for college work, so I flunked out, and well, I never did go back after, you know, I graduated in 72. I went to MTSU the fall of 72, the spring of 73, August of 73. I began my career as a Tennessee Business Enterprises vendor.
Well, college is not for everyone, but that doesn't mean you can't go on to be a success. Now, tell us about this this stand business that you got into under the Shepherd Act.
Well, back in 73, we had no formal type of training. We took on-the-job training. My first day, I took my training with Ray Mallory at the Knox County Courthouse in Knoxville, which is about 60 miles south of here, southeast of here, I guess. I went in, talked to Ray for a few minutes. He said, "I'm going to the restroom. I'll be back in a few minutes. Just carry on." 4:30 that afternoon, that dog showed back up, buddy. I didn't know. It was across the counter. People wanted a Pepsi-Cola. He had to reach in the cooler and, you know, find a good cold one and give them. And I knew none of the prices, knew where nothing was. And, buddy, I didn't even know where the restroom was to go find him. He wasn't at the restroom. He was good friends with the sheriff and the deputies and the bailiffs and the judges. I don't know where he was. But 4:30, he showed back up. And buddy, I knew quite a bit by then.
So you really learned by just being plunged into it, just no preparation, just do it. And you did it, and you learned the prices eventually, you learned the procedures. And how long was it before you got your own stand, Jerry?
Well, I worked with Ray Mallory for a month on job training. Then there was another vendor that worked at the Knoxville New Sentinel building that needed a nighttime employee, so he already discussed it, and if I was willing, I would finish up my training with Frank, and if I was, you know, satisfactory, Frank would hire me. So that's what happened, and I worked with Frank almost a year. And one day I was over, tell you this, one day I was over Sunday afternoon helping Frank get ready for the week, and Frank and his wife and a couple little kids, his son was about 9 years old then. They were off in another part of the building filling up drink machines or something, but Johnny came back down to the stand where I was, and Frank sold cans of chili, and he would, you know, open the can up and pour it in a paper squat cup and put it in the microwave and heat it. But Johnny came down, and he grabbed the squat cup, set the can of chili over in it, slapped it in the microwave, and punched the button. I yanked the door open, and I yanked Johnny up and gave him a spank. I said, "Now go tell your daddy I gave you a whipping and tell him what for." And when Frank came back, he says, "Johnny told me you gave him a whipping." I said, "Frank, he scared me. I didn't know what to do, but that's what I done. You know, Frank didn't get mad at me.
Oh, that's a good story. Now, when did you get, so you went through with Frank Mallory. Did you have any other training after that, or did you go right into your own stand before we get to the one where you're at now?
Well, while I was working for Frank, a stand came open in Athens, Tennessee, halfway between Knoxville and Chattanooga at the vocational school, and I went down there, my first actual location, and I spent almost 2 years there. While there, I wasn't making any money, to speak of. And I did have to go up on the prices somewhat, a nickel and a dime here, not much, but one day the superintendent walked in. He was used to giving, for a can of chili and two packs of crackers and a spoon, the price before I got there was 50 cents. And he walked up and said, "I got a can of chili." I went, I was nervous. I said, "That'd be 60 cents. He said, "What?" I said, "That'd be 60 cents. He said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, I'm just trying to make a living." He said, "Okay." From then on, he never gave me a hassle. And his secretary would come in and fill out my reports for me. Actually, I got I used Braille quite a bit. Back then to write down my paperwork, and she would come in and I would tell her what to put down, she'd put it in the proper place, and one day she was in there filling out my paperwork for me, and he's come in and he says, "Glenda, when you get through helping the jury, we got a lot of stuff we need to do in the office." And she said, "Oh, shit. When I get through here and go in there, he is absolutely going to chew my..." But, she came back a couple hours later. She said, "Jerry, you won't believe it. Mr. Barnett..." Oh, man, let it ring. Said, "Glenda, I know that helping Jerry is not part of your job, and I really appreciate you helping him. Anytime you can help him, go ahead." And I had always heard that guy was a mean, rough, crude dude, but he was really nice to me. I was going home one weekend, and I was going to the bus station, and he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going home. I got to go catch a bus here and go to Knoxville." He said, "Hop in, I'll take you over to the bus station." Yeah, the bus station was in Knoxville, 60 miles away, when he let me out. So he was really a nice dude. From Athens, I went to the Middle Tennessee Mental Health Hospital in Nashville. I worked there for, a couple of years. And then in 77, I went to the TVA steam plant in New Johnsonville, Tennessee, where I worked for 14 years. And this welcome center came open, or it was a new business 10 years ago. So when that came open, put my name in the hat, and here I am.
So were you one of the first stands to open on I-75, Jerry, when that interstate highway opened?
Well, the interstate opened up in early 70, 69 or 70. It was 1991, before any type of vending operation was put on the welcome centers. There's 11 welcome centers in the state of Tennessee, and they were all established in the spring of 91.
I see. Now, this location you have now is just on I-75, just on the Tennessee-Kentucky border, I think you told me one time. And you get a lot of tourist traffic, you get any local traffic there, or is it all interstate people moving south to Florida or going north to wherever they're going?
Yeah, we have a couple of local people that will come out, sometime during the summer, a couple, three times a week. We have a back road for the employees and, welcome center people, and they know about the back road. So they'll come out and get them an ice cream. One lady works in a garage here on this road, and a couple of times she'll come out each week and get her ice cream. And there's a few people in Jellico that comes out and gets basically ice cream, because I have a good variety of ice cream, and it's probably a little bit more expensive out there than what it would be at the grocery store, but it's fresh. Last week for the Easter weekend, my ice cream man came by twice on Tuesday and on Friday, and I purchased something like $800 worth of ice cream on those 2 days. But mostly it is one-time customers, tourists, but we have a quite a few customers that travel from Canada to Florida each year at about the same time. And they say, yeah, I remember seeing you last year or 2 years ago when I was in here. So we do have quite a bit of repeat customers.
I see. Now, I want to get into another area. Jerry has been a very successful stand operator and businessman. And sometimes that makes people a little cheap with their help. But not Jerry. Jerry has some very faithful workers, and he pays them above the minimum, and he also offers them medical insurance. Isn't that right, Jerry?
No, I have no fringe benefits at all there, Lou. That's one of the reasons I do pay them quite well, is because I don't have any type of fringe benefits. I do give them a paycheck for Christmas, but that's about it.
Some of these employees have been with you for years, haven't they, Jerry?
Well, my sister, Kathy, she's been with me since day one, but she's the only one. Maudzilla, as I like to call her, has been with me since July, and she's worked out pretty good. She enjoys her work pretty much, I think.
Now, Jerry, I want to ask you, you've won this honor of being the best stand operator in Tennessee and in that region. On what basis did they choose you, Jerry?
Well, I did nothing special I had no intentions of doing this or that to receive any type of recognition, but I was just carrying on everyday business. They have a standards of performance that you got to meet, and such as when the consultant comes in, she looks the place over, she checks out the employees, casually. She don't have us to line up and check, see if we wash behind our ears or whatever, but we're judged on our physical appearance, the appearance of the facility. Are the machines clean inside and out? Are the stale merchandise in the machine, out-of-date merchandise? Are the machines inside clean? Can you see through the glass? Is the floors clean, the wall, ceiling, storeroom, is it organized?
I see. And you have to show that the stand is profitable. Is it the most profitable one in your region?
And then they have a customer survey that they come by once a year, and they stand around most of the day having customers fill out a sheet of questions, and all that you get.
I think we're running into a little delay, if you can hear me.
No, I think I got a lag, but I don't know if I heard all your questions or not. But we do have a standards we've got to meet. My facility I gotta make at least a 50% gross profit, and then what was the last thing I said there, Lou, that you heard?
At least a 50% gross profit.
50% gross profit and a 35% net profit. My gross profit for 2000 was 61%. My net was 36, so that was in my...
What would you tell someone who's just starting out in the stand business? What should he or she do to succeed as you have succeeded?
Well, just treat folks like you be treated, with courtesy and you know, be friendly to them, and make sure that your facility is clean, and keep your paperwork in order, and pay your taxes, you know, keep your taxes and fees caught up, and mainly be friendly and keep the place clean, because, you know, the biggest turnoff is you go to a place, if there's stuff on the floor that looks like it's been there for a week, well, you don't want a candy bar out of something like that, so keep it clean and be nice to folks.
Well, that sounds like pretty down-to-earth advice. Now, Jerry, how much technology do you use in your business? I know you have the machines, but beyond the vending machines, what do you use in the line of technology?
I have four national vendors, three candy and a coffee, a hot beverage machine that have the double-talk voice synthesizers on them that will enable me to... I can program the machines. I can get the daily data from the machines. I listen to what people is purchasing from the machine, like, you know, AO or A1 or whatever. And in the office, I have a gateway computer. I have a copier, fax, scanner, and a printer, all combination, Hewlett-Packard G-Series. I have a DeckTalk Express voice synthesizer. For my daily paperwork, I use Corel 7 to put in my daily information, which I gather that together for each week, and then each week for a month to file out my official papers that goes to Nashville and Knoxville. Plus, my employees, they use QuickBooks to keep payroll and inventory, and also I use pull sheets to fill the machines with, which are created in Corel WordPerfect, and you know, they go to the machine to get all the data, and the machine will tell them what item and how many of each is sold during the last 24 hours. So, you know, I have a pretty good technology there, I think. I think I got about all of it.
Yeah, it does sound like. And, of course, you have your own personal computer at home. Now, Jerry, I want to ask you one more question on this subject. Are you self-taught on all of these machines and all of these programs? You taught yourself. You didn't go to a rehab center and get schooled on any of this. This is all self-taught, is it not?
That is true, Lou. The first computer, actually the first one I ever saw, was at a statewide convention. Arkansas had a representative there, someone out of the Nashville area who was a dealer. Had an open book set up, and I saw that, and a couple months later, I bought a computer that had a scanner and an open book on it, you know, something like that, a printer. That system cost me $5,300 out of my pocket. And I called the representative up one day and I said, hey, every time I turn my computer on or mash up or down arrow key, it says C:\"". What is that? Oh, don't worry about that. You'll see a lot of it, so nothing to worry about. So I have not been to any formal education. I've I've spent hundreds of dollars on books and, you know, Dolls for Dummies and stuff like that that I didn't understand some of it. But I read most of it and just picked up bits and pieces and snatches of it, you know, here and yonder. And I just love to go to Tech Talk and listen to people talk about different things. I picked up quite a bit of stuff here on For the People. So, yeah, it's all self.
No, you're pretty modest about that. Many of us confront that challenge of trying to teach ourselves computers, and here you've done it. And I'm sure the keyboard must be of some difficulty with you because of your right hand, but you've overcome that.
I don't know much, but what I know, I know.
Of course. But I think you ought to be commended in the way you've made yourself into a successful businessman and a successful human being. And one thing you left out about, I see. You use a lot of humor in your life, Jerry, with your customers and with people you talk to on For the People. And I think that's one thing that we really like about you is your sense of humor. Does that come naturally?
No, it's an acquired trait there, Lou. Like I told you, when I went to Athens Vocational School, I wasn't making any money much, and I did increase my prices there, but also I decided to start aggravating people, just absolutely aggravate the socks off of them. And most of the students there were girls from the office occupation classes, and I would listen to their voices, and I would connect the name to a voice, but when I talked to this girl, I would call her someone else. And all they would, at first they'd come in, get them the thing back then was barbecue potato chips and chocolate milk. They'd come in, get them a milk and a barbecue potato chips and go outside or go somewhere else, back to the classroom. But when I started picking on these people, they started strapping around and picking on me and carrying on. So I've developed a weird sense of humor from that time, I believe, or Lou.
Well, I can see what you're doing. You're trying to build a relationship between yourself and your customers. So they wanted to come in, not just for the food, but to talk to you and be teased by you and you'd fun them and they'd fun you. It was a wonderful technique, and it did work, and it's still working, is it not?
Yeah, sir, let me tell you an incident that happened while I was at the vocational school. I was putting drinks in I had an upright cooler. Refrigerator had two sliding doors in front, and I was putting drinks in there one day, and I wasn't paying any attention to what was going on around me, and this guy came in, slipped up behind me, grabbed my ankle, and he sounded like a Doberman that was absolutely about to eat me up, buddy. Before I stopped, I was inside that cooler.
Were there any other amusing incidents that happened to you, or embarrassing incidents, in all these years you've been operating your businesses?
Well, I got the old Bill back at one time. He worked on someone's car, and, you know, I don't know if he did a brake job or what he did to their car, but they came and got it and started with the main nut to help the bearings and everything on. He even got to put that on, so we aggravated him for years over that. One day, Mr. Dickey came in with a chicken leg. He scared me to death that day, but he scared himself. He put a chicken leg in the microwave, and that thing exploded. Yes, sir, that thing absolutely exploded. I hit the floor, and he hit the door.
Well, what tricks did you play on some of your customers? I see they played a lot on you, but what did you do to them?
There's a girl there named Pam Abels, and every time you said anything to Pam, shut up, just shut up, just shut up, shut up, shut up, just shut up. Now one day I was sitting out on the bench by the sidewalk, and she walked by, and she said, I said, hi Pam.
I'm not sure we still have Jerry online. He might have a technical problem there. I think here's another example of the numerous examples I think are out there, and the some of the examples I'm trying to bring to the fore here. There's an individual who, in Jerry's case, really started out with a silly accident, lost his sight, lost some of the fingers of his right hand, was a homeboy, went off to school. As he said, he cried for 3 years, he thinks. He was very unhappy, very lonely. But it was the best thing that could have happened to him. He got an education. He tried college. He wasn't that much interested in it. But instead of sitting at home complaining about his lot in life, he got into the stand business at a time when things weren't very sophisticated. Training programs weren't very sophisticated. Here's a man who really is self-taught, self-educated, whether it came to the stand business, whether it came to computers. He did it on his own. And Jerry, I don't know much about his personal life, but I don't think he's married. He's a man who has cut his own way through life on his own, with the help of others, of course, but a man who has triumphed in the end, and now has just recently been recognized as the best stand operator in the state of Tennessee and in his region.
I'm back, Lou.
And I think he seemed to detail those reasons why he is, and they were pretty fundamental, pretty basic, but he did everything right. And even a man with his...
I'm back, Lou.
I was just saying a few things about you, Jerry, how you're such a son of a gun. I was saying to them, Jerry, that you've made your own way through your own courage, your own strength, your own determination. And I know you're a modest guy, but let's face it, you've achieved a great deal from the beginnings that you sprang from. And you just went ahead, and I said that you had the courage, the strength, and the determination to succeed. And you have succeeded, and I hope where our technology is still working here. I just want one final thing, Jerry, because you've been so gracious to come on here at the last minute and have me poking around asking these questions and hopefully giving you the opportunity to tell your story. The final question or two I want to ask you is there anything in your life up to this point that is so memorable you'd like to talk about it? Is there anything here that I have not asked? I haven't asked a lot of questions, and you might have some answers that I haven't even thought of questions for, but is there anything you'd like to say that I haven't asked you about?
I cannot think of anything, Lou, but... other than the decision that you make today does have a lot of bearing on what happens tomorrow. Back in July the 23rd of 1955, if I had chosen to take that thing and give it to my mama or daddy or whatever, I have no idea where I'd be today. But on that day, I made the biggest decision of my life, and that was to put a match to that little shiny thing, and that little shiny thing, just like a hanger nade, just went everywhere. And so what you do today does have a bearing on what your future will be.
Well, that's well put, Jerry. Very well put. Unfortunately, you can't be held responsible for that. You were just a child. But what about people today in their adult years? They're making decisions, and those decisions are going to impact on them in years to come. Jerry, I wanted to tell you again, I want to thank you for coming on at the last minute, sharing your life your career with us. And I think people have a sense of your modesty, your success, and not only that, your deep sense of humor, which I think has carried you a long way. And I want to thank you. Now, before we sign off here, I was wondering if anyone in the listening audience would like to ask you a question or two. If you would have a question for Jerry, would you ask it now?
I know you're in the office area. What are your hours? And I know you're working 7 days a week. You don't get much time off, do you?
By state law, I'm required to work 30 hours a week at my discretion. I can do it all in 2 days, but I'm supposed to be there at 30 hours total each week, but I work something like 42. I'm an old bachelor. I live a quarter of a mile away from work. So even though I'm at home, I'm on call. And, if I wasn't at work, I don't know what I'd be doing there, Bobby. I usually work Monday through Friday from about 8 o'clock to 2. Saturday from, sometimes I hang around to 2 o'clock, most of the time about 12 or so. And Sunday I go up to my mother's for dinner at 12, so, I get my hours in, plus a few more, and if I wasn't down there at work, most of the time while I'm down there, I'm on the computer. You see me on the computer throughout the day various times when I'm not doing anything. I actually don't do any work other than paperwork. I manage the place. If we have a problem with the machine, I make the decision on what to do about it. I'll go out with the help of my assistant to see if I can correct the problem. If I can't correct it and they can't find it in the operations manuals what to do for it, then I pick up the phone and make a phone call. If the machine is 100% out of the order, we put an out of order on it and cut it off. If it's, just a couple of little things wrong with it, then I have to wait till there's problems with more than one machine, or I have four items that won't work, then I can call a repair in. But most of the time, if it's a small problem, and I think that I do need the machine operational, fairly quick, I'll find another problem or a way to create a problem where the machine is out, and within 24 hours it's repaired.
Did someone else have a question for Jerry?
This is Cliff from East Tennessee. I just wonder if Jerry Hack feels to be called the son of a gun. You have upgraded.
Well, most of the time, Cliff, it's the B word.
Yeah, Jerry, I wonder if you serve hot chocolate.
Yes, ma'am, my vending machine sells hot chocolate. You can get hot chocolate by itself, or you can get a cappuccino, which will grind coffee beans and make a half a cup of coffee and put a half a cup of chocolate with it.
I just wanted to add a comment that lots of folks who know Jerry in real time, Flowers and Gordon, have told me when we've been talking about him and his craziness, that he's one of the kindest men they know, and he'd give you the shirt off his back. I think every one of us would agree you're one of the funniest guys up here, and lots of people really love you, Jerry. There's 29 of us in here right now listening to every word. Are you nervous?
No, I am. I would talk more, but you keep buffing me off, Jennifer.
Go ahead, Flowers.
I just wanted to say to Jerry that I certainly appreciate him sharing his life story with us, and I have a whole different outlook on him now. And also, congratulations on being selected the Vendor of the Year.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bates. I appreciate that.
Jerry, this is Lou again. Do you have any plans to expand your stand or go in a new direction with your vending business, or are you content with the way it is now?
Well, I would like to expand, but the powers to be, such as your federal government and your state government, I'm under somewhere or another the federal highway laws and the state highway laws, so they have no plans to expand my vending area. It's as full as it can be right now. There's no more room for a new machine or anything. And I'm always in the market for a new product, and you know, I have several products, like Snicker candy bars. That's an old-time favorite, but I'm always looking for something new there, Lou. So if anybody's got a product they like, let me know what it is, and I'll see if I can get it.
Said like a true entrepreneur, keep the customers happy and keep them coming back.
Jerry, do you sell any kind of sandwiches?
No, Bobby, I don't sell any kind of sandwiches or food, so-called food. It's junk food, you know, chips and candy bars, pop and ice cream. And you know, I do have fruit juices and water and stuff, but it's no good food.
Do most of your customers, when they come in, do they have kids?
Yes, sir, and they love the ice cream machines.
Lou, we have 3 minutes left. Dennis has to leave, and he's our recorder, so if you want to wrap it up, it's all yours.
Okay. Well, Jerry, let me say again, I appreciate you coming on at the last moment and being such an entertaining guest and giving us some idea of what it takes to succeed, even when you start with a couple strikes on you. And I think everything you've achieved is because of your own strength and determination and courage and your own native intelligence and sense of humor. I think everyone's profited and been entertained by your words tonight, and I want to thank you for sharing your life story and your occupation with us. Thank you very much, sir. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on and sharing this with us. Thanks, Jerry.